This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Let us now, shall we, join the greatest debate in the history of creation, and that is this. Does God exist? Without doubt, the greatest question to face humanity in its history, the controversy rages on today with a recent spate of books on both sides of the divide. However, this debate is not a new phenomenon. For centuries, our greatest philosophers, from Aristotle to Nietzsche, have sought to clarify the idea of a supreme being and examine the unique conundrums that he, or she, or it, raises. Andrew Pessin is a professor of philosophy and the chair of the philosophy department at Connecticut College. His new book is The God Question: What famous thinkers from Plato to Dawkins have said about the divine. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
We also want to let folks know that you have another new book out as well, and that is The 60-Second Philosopher. Expand your mind on a minute or so a day, and we'll talk about that as well before we let you go. So I have to ask you, I had read somewhere that you got the idea for this book reading about the flying spaghetti monster.
Right.
Is this true, and what is that?
If your listeners don't know what the flying spaghetti monster is, it's worth Googling it immediately, or at least after this conversation. The flying spaghetti monster, they call themselves the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Sometimes they call themselves Pastafarians. And these people believe that the universe was created by basically a large pile of spaghetti. And they have a whole website, and they have a whole bunch of arguments for the existence of this strange being, the flying spaghetti monster, and long, detailed debates about the exact properties and attributes of the flying spaghetti monster. And most of all, they pride themselves on having better merchandise than most mainstream religions. Now, I looked this up one day because one of my students happened to mention, and it looked pretty amusing, and it's obviously meant to be satirical. They're quite clever, and they're pretty amusing, but what they're doing, of course, is mocking people who believe in the existence of God by making fun of the whole idea. But what struck me as I was sort of looking through their website was the thought that if people were to look at what the most famous religious philosophers have said about God from in the Western tradition, Judaism, Christianity, as well as Islam, it might look to them an awful lot like what the flying spaghetti monster looks like to us. Namely, some very, very strange claims are being made about the universe, about the existence of this being, about the nature and properties of this being. Except, of course, there's an important difference. The flying spaghetti monster people are just having fun, and they're just joking around. But the great religious thinkers were, in fact, deeply, deeply serious, deeply, deeply careful and methodical, and most of all, extremely rational. So what generated the idea for this book was the thought that it would be really interesting to explore the most important and influential and especially the many strange things that the great religious thinkers have had to say about God, to bring out the idea that once you start thinking about the nature of God, you're going to find that you're reaching some pretty interesting and unusual conclusions. So the spaghetti monster got me going on it, but once I got going, it was a matter of really sort of researching the history of philosophical thinking about the nature of the divine.
We're talking with Andrew Pessin. The new book is The God Question, and of course this search and your readings take you back to Plato and Aristotle and Cicero and on and on and on. So share with us, if you can, some of the ones that really stand out that you think Americans today should have some appreciation of, and we should know about these ideas that we've inherited and may not even realize it.
Right. The book proceeds chronologically. So it starts with the beginning of Western philosophy, which is Plato, the great ancient Greek philosopher, about 2,500 years ago. And it goes all the way up to Richard Dawkins, the well-known and controversial Oxford biologist whose atheist book from a couple years ago I think is still on the bestseller list. So it really covers a whole long period of time. And it goes chronologically, and there are thinkers represented from pretty much every century from Plato up until the 21st century. It's a little hard for me to pick out one because so many of these thinkers have so many interesting things to say, but if I were to start with one, it would probably be St. Thomas Aquinas, who is the greatest medieval Christian thinker, And what has struck me about, a couple of things really strike me about Aquinas, and I think no matter what one's religious tradition, Judas, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, or even whether one's an atheist, I think Aquinas really merits extended study. The main reason he merits that study, I think, is that he is sort of the epitome of rational, logical, careful thinking about the issue of God. He is or was a devout Catholic, of course, but at the same time, he wanted to determine just how far reason can take us in understanding the nature of this being and in leading us to whether we have good reason to believe in the existence of this being. He recognized that reason will have limits, that especially if you're dealing with some being you conceive to be an infinite being, our very, very tiny human minds are never going to be able to fully grasp this being. But he wants to know just where those limits were. How far could reason take us? What is it rational to believe about this God, and how rational is it to believe in the existence of this being? Even if it turned out not to be so rational, he was willing to believe on the basis of faith, but he didn't want to take that leap of faith just at the beginning. He wanted to stretch reason as far as it could possibly go. And so if you spend a little time working your way through his great works, his most famous one is something called the Summa Theologica in Latin, which basically means the summary of theology, sort of the collection of everything there is to know about God. He proceeds incredibly methodically, distinguishes a variety of different questions that one could ask about God, and then works his way through sort of every possible answer one could give to those questions, looking at pros and cons to each answer, and finally in the end determining what he thinks is the right answer and why the other answers are wrong. So for the pure exercise in reasoning and in thinking, Aquinas is to me perhaps the most impressive figure. And the fact that he absolutely is devout, absolutely committed to believing in the existence of God, but is also willing to question and see how far his questioning can go is what makes him especially admirable to me.
We're talking with Andrew Pessin. He's a professor of philosophy at Connecticut College. His new book is The God Question. And, of course, we find the foundations of the Enlightenment. You know, here we are in Charlottesville, the home of Thomas Jefferson, and James Madison was just down the road, James Monroe. The foundations for the Enlightenment arguably go back to Aquinas.
If we think of the foundations of the Enlightenment as the rising prominence of the use of reason to understand the world around us, then absolutely, no question about it.
Yeah.
Of course, as the Enlightenment comes, thinkers start to reach the opposite conclusion. So starting around the time of the Enlightenment, as you get into the 18th century in Europe in particular, you start discovering that it for the first time, it begins to be publicly accessible to be an atheist, permissible to be an atheist. You rarely see that in the many centuries previous to that. So perhaps Aquinas would regret the outcome of this process of reasoning, but as human beings started seeing themselves more as reasoners and less as dependent on either authority or faith, atheism started to become a more prominent feature.
Yeah. Andrew, tell us about deism, because, you know, we often hear today there's a lot of fundamentalists today, and even, you know, conservative Christians will say that America was founded as a Christian nation. I don't believe that to be accurate historically, but they will argue this point that, you know, folks like Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and these people, George Washington, were completely devout Christian fundamentalists and were trying to create a Christian nation. But more often than not, these guys were deists. And explain to us the distinction.
Both the term theism and deism, with a D, can have different meanings. So what I understand by the term deism is something along the following lines, that it affirms belief in the existence of God and that God created the universe in the beginning, however exactly long ago that was. But then a deist tends to hold that once God finished this creation process of the universe, however long ago that was, that he or it or they or she more or less rested, doesn't any longer become actively involved in day-to-day affairs. This started to become a prominent position in the Enlightenment, of course, partly because as you get into the 17th and 18th century, modern science is getting underway, and modern physics in particular, and modern physics as it's developed by Galileo and even René Descartes, who's more known as a philosopher but in fact made major contributions to physics, started to see the world as mechanical clockwork, that the world consisted of material matter, material objects and particles, all moving according to very rigid and strict laws of nature. And if you take that view of the world, it's not long before you'll start to ask yourself, well, what is it that God is actually doing in history? What is it that God is doing in the world? We can explain how the planets move and how the tides move and everything that and how things move on Earth and everything that happens on Earth without ever invoking God. We merely need to invoke matter, the properties of matter, and the laws of nature. So as this scientific view started to become prominent in the 17th and 18th centuries, for the first time, the question of what role God has in the day-to-day world became a very, very real question. And deism, we could understand as a sort of compromise position between the more extreme view that God is fully responsible, causally responsible for everything that happens every minute, every day, and atheism, where God doesn't even exist, so of course he can't do anything. Deism says, yeah, we need God to explain how this world came into being in the first place. In particular, we need God to invoke God to explain the laws of nature, the laws of physics. But once we've got the universe existing and the laws of physics, there's not a whole lot left for God to do anymore, except maybe for the occasional miracle.
Right, right.
But then as you get into the 17th, 18th century, even the most religious philosophers, and let me mention someone who I'm sure your readers haven't heard of, a Frenchman named Nicolas Malebranche. He was the most important philosopher in France after Descartes, both chronologically at the end of the 17th century and in terms of influence. And he was a priest, so he was a devoutly religious thinker. But he basically argued for all sorts of philosophical reasons that the best understanding of God is one whereby God creates the laws of nature and then doesn't really do anything else. And in fact, miracles almost never happen, according to this very religious, devoutly religious thinker, Malebranche. So that's pretty much deism. It's a nice sort of intermediate position between the view that God does everything at all times and the atheist position that God doesn't exist.
Hence the Jefferson Bible, where he takes his razor and cuts out all the miracles from the Bible.
That's right. That's right. Even Malebranche, who again was a priest, he would look back at the miracles which are discussed in Scripture. I'll just give one example: the parting of the Red Sea in the Old Testament, as the Hebrews are escaping from Egypt. And he was part of the beginning tradition that said, well, we don't really need to think of that as a miracle. It could have just been the tides or something like that, giving very naturalist explanations of these things. And it's not because, today's public atheist, the popularity of atheism is certainly on the rise. And atheists have a different motive to deny that there are miracles, because they deny that God exists and they want to explain everything in terms of science. But what's important to stress here is that even profoundly religious thinkers have motivation to deny that there are too many miracles. And that's what Malebranche was doing.
Andrew Pessin is the author of The God Question, what famous thinkers from Plato to Dawkins have said about the divine. Andrew, let's talk about Dawkins. Who is Richard Dawkins, and what is his message for folks today?
Richard Dawkins is a biologist at Oxford who a couple of years ago published a book called The God Delusion, which has ignited a lightning storm of interest and controversy, because he's not merely an atheist and he's not merely being critical of believers and religions, but he is doing so in a sort of very blatant, rhetorically violent way. He is not a philosopher, and he doesn't pretend to be a philosopher, but he is engaging with a lot of philosophical issues here. And what I find interesting about him is he is an example of what I will sometimes call, and I don't like this term, but let me explain what it means, the unreasonable atheist. So I like to distinguish between reasonable atheists and unreasonable atheists. And at the same time, I also distinguish between reasonable theists, believers, and unreasonable theists. And what I mean by that is this. The reasonable versions are the ones who see that the point of the investigation is to use our reason and to be open-minded and see where reason will take us and explore all the arguments in a careful, methodical, rational way. You find these reasonable people, people who are sort of devoted to reason, on both sides of the divide, theists and atheists. And in my particular opinion, reasonable theists can learn a tremendous amount from the reasonable atheists, and reasonable atheists can learn a tremendous amount from the reasonable theists, even if in the end they reach differing conclusions. But what tends to dominate the public discussion, what gets a lot of the media attention, are the more unreasonable versions of both the theists and the atheists. These are people who are less sort of committed to open-minded, rational inquiry, but either are more ideological or more fundamentalist in certain ways, or evangelical perhaps on the theist side, or, well, actually, why not on the atheist side as well. These are people who tend to be more interested in bashing and ridiculing the other side than in actually listening carefully to what the other side has to say and engaging with it. And in my mind, I tend to hold Dawkins up as an example of the unreasonable atheist. He, you know, in his criticisms of theism, he doesn't sort of carefully go through really the important and sophisticated thinkers who developed theism. He takes fairly cartoonish versions of religious belief and tries to smash those. And it's effective, and it gains a lot of attention and controversy, but in my opinion, more can be gained by sort of carefully working one's way through the reasonable thinkers on both sides of the divide. And of course, my book is aimed to provide the average person with a guide through the reasonable thinkers on both sides of the divide.
Yeah, I'm curious, Andrew, what were your thoughts after you spent so much time reading about the history of the philosophical thoughts about God throughout the world? What are you left with at the end of the day? I mean, what general impression are we making any kind of progress about understanding this very idea?
That's a great question. I should mention the book focuses on Western thinkers, and for sake of space, had to exclude Eastern thinkers. I think one thing that I come away with personally is recognizing it's a hard question that human beings in general cannot reach sort of global consensus on anything, much less on this. Much less on the answer to this question of whether God exists. But what one comes away with as one studies the history, and I hope that the reader will come away with on looking at my book, is that there's something extremely important about the act of inquiry or the process of inquiry itself. And so, no, there aren't any definite conclusions available. There is certainly no definite consensus either on the nature of God or the existence of God. But when you read through the reasonable people who have explored this, you realize that that although, of course, the question of God is ultimately beyond our abilities, we're very finite and limited and prone to error as human beings in our quest for knowledge, that the act of inquiry itself can take one really, really far in one's personal life. And ultimately, it's the process of inquiry which is the sort of the highest value itself. So if you're a theist, if you're a believer, my hope is that in reading this book, your thoughts on God will be stretched further, and that will be a kind of religious or spiritual experience for you as you think further and more deeply and more carefully about God. And if someone is an atheist, then you may not be persuaded to believe God exists as you look through the various thinkers that are represented in this book, but your mind will be engaged much more fully and much more deeply on the question through the process. And of course, if you're an agnostic or just somehow on the fence on the question, the book is trying to give you the tools and material to help you make up your mind. It's giving you a look at what some of the most famous thinkers have had to say in support of God's existence and about God, and of course, especially in more contemporary times, what some of the major thinkers have had to say critical of the existence of God. So the idea would be that the reader should engage in the process of inquiry himself or herself and have the tools to reach his or her own decision.
He is the genius from the David Letterman Show. He's professor of
philosophy. Oh, you're too
kind. Chair of the philosophy department at Connecticut College. His new book is The God Question, what famous thinkers from Plato to Dawkins have said about the divine. He's also got another book out right now, The 60-Second Philosopher, Expand Your Mind on a Minute or So a Day. Andrew, great to have you on the program. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. If readers or listeners are interested, my website is www.andrewpessin.com, and I have a couple of blogs related to both books, so if one wants to get involved in the conversation, that would be the way to do it.
There you go. Andrew Pessin, that's P-E-S-S-I-N.
No, P-E-S as in Sam, S as in Sam, I-N.
There you go. Thanks, Great. Andrew.
Thank you for having me.
Take care.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.